love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is August 8th, 2012. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have an awesome show for you tonight. We have Mr. Filippo Curto, and he's going to talk a little bit to us tonight and tell us his story. He says that he constantly watched his mom get beaten up by his father and hated his father for being such a punk and for being so abusive. He ended up leaving home at age 15, ended up turning to the streets, and without further more, we're going to let him tell his story in just a few minutes. But before we do that, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Yeah, I just want to thank everybody for tuning in to our show every Wednesday night, and want to thank everybody who supports our movement, and want to thank all our soldiers in the prison system and in the streets. And, you know, our newsletter goes to 50 prisons across the country, so I got to give a big shout-out to our homegirls and our homeboys that's in the joint holding us down and pushing education over failure. So without further ado, we're going to turn the mic over to my man, and he's going to formally introduce himself.
Hey, everybody, I'm Filippo Curto. I'm from Bayside, Queens. I pretty much grew up in all the boroughs, in every borough, Queens, New York, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Staten Island. Pretty much I just want to share what my experience was out there in the field, out there in the street, you know, and what's changed and how we could change, you know, the things that we go through and what and how we can make it into a positive for almost everybody out there, because it's there if you want it, you know. It's just a mind over matter type thing, you know. And that's pretty much it.
My man, so what we're going to ask you tonight, we're going to ask you to go back in your history and what started you to getting in the street life. And you know, as we heard, you didn't like your father abusing your mom. So what led you to being in these streets?
Well, at a very young age, at like 5 years old, you know, I had an abusive dad. First thing I knew how to do was hit. And seeing my mother stood up for me, and she stood up for me at the age of 5 and said that she was going to, you know, leave if, you know, if this man ever picked up his hands again, you know, and that never happened, you know. And as time went on from there, I seen a lot of mental abuse, physical abuse between my father and my mother, and that kind of as a kid let me lash out in so many different ways, you know. So, you know, at home things are always tense. So when you leave the house, you know, you feel that anger, that point of, you know, there's no one else that can hurt you, knowing that the people at home are so quick to take you down, to break down your spirit, to pretty much mentally take control over so many different things. So then you start learning the love of the street. You know, some of the best people I've ever met were out there in the street, people just like me, people that just experienced that they went through that pretty much relate to what I've been through. You know, so you start looking for a different type of family, you know, a different type of way to fit into society, and a different type of way to cover yourself on so many different aspects you know, nobody being able to get at you. So, you know, I looked on to some of, you know, the older guys in the neighborhood, and knowing that if they made it through, I could also. You know, at age 11, you know, and this is where, you know, and this is where I get at, that people from the street that I've met were so close to me, is that we had that loyalty, that respect for each other. And you realize, as time goes on, that loyalty and respect eventually fades. And we realize that when you're looking at, you know, some hard times, some, you know, people just don't send their lives over for something that we all have been through in a certain way to pretty much cover ourselves from anyone, for any hurt, for anyone trying to beat you down, you know?
You mentioned to me in an email that were there four of you siblings in the family?
Yeah, it was me, my three brothers, and my mother, you know, and pretty much all three of us, all four of us got the blunt of every piece of this man's anger. So what we did was we took that anger and we brought it out to the street, and that's what makes us animals out there. That's you know, that's what cultivates all that anger and hate among certain things that really don't really matter. You know, so as a young kid growing up, to seeing that, you know, you start heading towards a dangerous place, you know, and I'm sure that a lot of people out there could understand that, you know.
Right.
And we know we're just angry, but we don't know where that anger is coming from, so we just lash out and pick up to what most makes us feel better.
Right. Now, you said here you are considered personal punching bag, so your dad beat up on all of you, but you also said that you had some broken legs and that your brother got a claw hammer to him. So, I mean, just briefly explain a little bit about how some of the beatings went.
Well, you know, my father was an old-school Sicilian guy, you know, from overseas. He wanted to build a company. You know, he wanted to build a family that way. You know, so basically, if we made some sort of mistake or whatever it was, we paid for it at that moment. Actually, my father, my brother got the hammer claw in his head. You know, like, we had this guy working with us, and the guy started whistling, just whistling on the job. It had nothing to do with my brother. And my father had sent the kid down, sent my brother down to tell him to shut up. And my brother did. And the kid, as the kid went back upstairs to help my father work, you know, the guy started whistling again. And my father had asked him, like, yo, did you tell this guy to shut up? Turns out, my father told him, like, yo, you didn't tell him the way I told you. So he took the back of the hammer claw, got him right in the back of the head. You know, so that, you know, that, like, I wasn't, it was very hard for me to let that go. It's very hard for me to let that go, because he wasn't man enough to stand up and deal with what he had to deal with in his life. He had to take that upon people that were, you know, that loved him, that cared about him the most. And he took advantage of that. He took advantage of that to the point where he knew that he could break us down in our spirit. You understand? So at 15 years old, you know, I mean, and through seeing all of this, it brought me to a bad place. It brought me to a place where if I would have ever crossed that bridge, I would have probably never made it back out of that. You know? And I always had my mother, like, I was there, their strong arm, my brothers, my mother, you know, my father even, in certain aspects of life. So, and that's what he feared most about me, and that's what I feared most about him, is that
I'm not the type of person that would just walk away. And he knew that. He knew that very clearly. So at 15, I had to make a decision. I had to make a decision whether I was going to go towards going after him and possibly looking at, you know, a bid, because that's the type of person that he was. Like, you know, what I meant by honorable and what I understood from the street, what honorable, is that you guys scrap. You do what you got to do. You shake hands, you walk away. It's done. You know, he was the type of man, if, you know, you cracked him once, he'd call the cops. So at 15 years old, I had to make that decision. I had to make that decision for my brothers. I had to make that decision for my mother, because she pretty much straight up said it. Like, listen, if this what happens to me and my brother, what happens to you and your brother? Where are you guys going to be? So at that point, I had to go to the street. I left. My clear decision was to pick up and go and deal with the world the way it is out there, cold. And we all, I mean, from my clear understanding of the street is cold, until you find that group of people, that group of that can relate, that group of understands that anger, and then you just keep going out there, and you just, you know, you start learning the things of how to survive. You learn how to survive out there. You learn on what needs to, you know, like, whether it's good or bad, you know, the good normally doesn't overcome the bad sometimes being out there in the street. It just don't. At 15 years old, what do you know? What do you think you're going to see? You're going to see drugs. You're going to see hustling. You're going to see a way to keep that roof over your head. So you're going to do whatever it takes to get there. But me, as a man, I've always despised. Like, I could never see, like, even at 19 years old, I seen, you know, a man in the middle of 5th Avenue and 23rd Street, and I had a 9-to-5 job. I go over there, there's a Zale store, the guy goes in, grabs his girlfriend, brings her out, beats her up, literally picks this woman up over his head and body slams her onto the street. There's about 50 men standing around there, so many different other people standing, and nobody decided to say anything except for me. So now I get myself involved. Again, I wind up scrapping with the guy. Two cop cars pull up. The guy gets out of the car. She decides that she's going to press charges on me for beating up the guy that was beating on her. So, it was always something that I could never deal with. I could never see a woman get hit. I couldn't see a normal argument, because that's something that I don't understand. I don't understand the way a normal argument should have been. For me, it was just, that's what it was. When I seen him, whenever I got into a fight, whenever I got called out, that's all I saw in front of me, regardless of who it was. You know, and the street, you know, like, I never clung to a group of people, per se. Like, I never said, well, you know what, I'm down with this crew, I'm down with this guy, I'm down with that. No, I took what I learned from these street people, you know, and I learned what was out there, and I learned who was about me. And you know what? I had certain people in my life that I got to thank God that they were there, because they told me, street guys, older guys, yo, you have to have your main earn. Forget about scoring. Forget about this. Forget about that. So you know what? And I was told at a young age, there's always a bag of cash sitting on the corner. You just got to know how to get it. So at that point, being 15, 16, 17 years old, nowhere to go, cold world out there, people are trying to knock you down because they don't understand where you're coming from. So you take that advice and you turn to so many different other ways. What is it? What? Selling drugs?
Mm-hmm.
Stealing cars?
Yep.
You know, so now that gives your community past judgment on you. Past judgment, I'm not even seeing. Your teachers don't understand what's going on with you. All they see is that you're wilding out. That's all they see. You know? And that's part of that, you know, that's one of the major reasons out there, is that because people out there that have the opportunity to see these kids going through what they're going through, have that opportunity to open up, have that opportunity to see, listen, you know what, if this kid's acting this way, what's going on? What's actually going on with that kid? What's going, you know, what, you know, like, you know, I mean, I honestly, to a teacher, I was probably the biggest pain in the ass, wise-ass kid. But, you know, I mean, in reality, why is that kid lashing out the way he is? What's going
on? Exactly.
You know?
And you even said that you had a teacher that told you you weren't worth a shit.
Well, put it this way. I was in the fifth grade, and I was having some problems with math, right? So now I'm sitting with this teacher. She had like this vendetta towards me. I don't know what it was, whether it was because I was the wisest kid lashing out, and I was, you know, whatever, all the parents and all the kids were talking about because I was the one losing control. All of a sudden, they passed judgment on me, and she straight up told me right to my face, like, "Yo, you're." And she actually told me, "I'm gonna call your father." She called my father up, told him I had a problem with math. You know that the guy stood me off in his room with this math problem, and every time he got up to see if it was done, and it wasn't because I didn't know how to do it, the man beat me for it. The guy literally smacked me in the face over and over again till about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I had such a hate for this teacher. I had such a hate for her. 10 years later, a couple of years later, I end up in junior high school. Now, junior high school, you got more freedom, you got more things to do, you got more ways to get out. So that's what I wind up doing. I wind up getting into brawls. I wind up getting into fights. I wind up selling drugs through school. I wind up doing all this crazy shit. And nobody understood why. But I had this one teacher told me right to my face, "You will never amount to anything. To anything." Wow. So,
at
that point.
Exactly.
Okay, boy. At that point, what do you do? What do you do? As a kid and as, you know, going through what you're going through at home, you're going to start to believe that.
Right. And lash out.
You know, you lash out, you know. Next thing you know, the neighborhood cops know you because everybody's got your name your name in their mouth. You know,
same neighborhood cops should know that your dad beat your mom, and they should know what's going on. If they know that you're causing trouble, they should know why. If they're neighborhood cops and you've been there forever.
Well, you know, this is the twist to the story, and this is when things get good. You know, at 15 when I left, I wound up going back home at 18 years old, just for about 6 months. You know. And it didn't work out. Me and my father were going at it. You know, I decided, you know, let me go. Let me get a job. Let me try to figure out what I got to do. So I found out during the time that I was away, my mother and my father were going at it. My father went to go hit my mother. And my brother at the time was about 16 years old. So the kid got involved, he got in the middle, and he wanted to punch my father in the face. Sometime after that, before that, I was already arrested half a dozen times just for the cops to have a reason to pick on me, you know. Which, you know, I mean, listen, you know, I know that the cops are doing what they got to do, and they don't understand where we were coming from. You know, but I was a troubled kid. So, I mean, I get that point. But, so, I wind up breaking out this story. My father throws my brother out into the street. He locks him out of the house, tells him, "Yo, you're out, that's it. You figure out your own way." I had happened to have been out with a couple of my friends. My brother lets me know. He pages me. He tells me, "Listen, this is what's going on." So I went back to the house. And at this point, this is the first time my father's ever seen me, like, actually disrespect them and lose my mind. So I went to the door and I knocked on the door. Man comes up. He comes out and he sees me bugging out. And I'm trying to be as respectful as I can in front of my mother. And I said, "You know what? Why don't you come downstairs and talk to me? Why don't you come outside and talk?" And the man wouldn't. He wouldn't. So finally, I got aggravated enough. I kicked in the whole side of his truck. Do you know that this man stood behind my mother, the woman that he has beat, all right, for years in front of us, and looked at her and said, "Call the police." So obviously the neighbors called the cops. The cops came. The arresting officer of what I had a couple of months before
was standing there. And he had asked me what was going on. And I said to him, you know what? I said, you guys know me for the shit that I've done out here. See, you guys have no idea what I've been dealing with this house right here. You have no idea what this is all about. So the cop said to me, so I went up to my father, and I told him, listen, the only way they're going to move me from here without you coming outside is they're going to have to put two of them right between my eyeballs. So I explained to the cops what was happening. And right away, after I saw, I kicked in the side of their truck and I lashed out, they're ready to put the cuffs on me. They actually took me and my brother, they put me in the car, they gave me money to get on the train, and me and my brother had to ride the train for about a week. We had to ride the train for about a week and figure out our way. And before I left, I looked at my father and I said to him, let me tell you something, my man. I said, every time you, or from here on in, if you ever thought about picking up your hand to that woman, look at her. Look at her and make her your angel, because tonight, that's the only reason why I'm leaving, is because she sat there and she literally begged with tears coming down her eyes, because she knew at that point, I didn't give a shit about no cops, no guns, what was going to happen. I didn't care. Do you know that that man slept for 6 years with the lights on in his house? For 6 years, that's what he did, because he was afraid. And then at the end, I mean, you know, and that's, and I'm really proud of that. I'm really, really proud of that. You know, and I mean, and what I mean by proud is that I was able to stand up. I was able to stand up. You understand? I mean, am I proud of the situation? Do I wish that on anybody? Absolutely not. Do I wish that I could ever had not gone through that? Absolutely. Absolutely. But then again, it built the character of who I am. And it showed me what it means to love your own kids. You understand?
Right.
My man.
Did he ever start beating your mom after that, though, or did that continue?
No, well, you know what? That actually didn't continue. That didn't continue. Eventually, my youngest brother winded up having to leave the house. My father wound up having some girlfriend. He actually brought her. He actually brought his girlfriend home to my mother, and she dealt with that. And she wasn't allowed to see any of us. She wasn't allowed to see any of us because if she did, she'd either catch a beating or she'd have to be on the street. So one day, finally, after 30 years, going through that, my mother decided, because she's seen her grandkids, and said, you know what, I'm out. After 30 years of going through that.
Wow.
You understand what I'm saying? And
it's a long time to go through abuse.
30 years, you know, 30 years of going through that type of abuse, that type of mental anguish that anyone, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter who it is, whether it's a woman, whether it's a man, that type of anguish to someone's mind, you don't know where it takes them to.
Right.
You know? Amen. I agree with that, because, you know, in this world, I've been listening to you, and, you know, I relate to your story, because, you know, there's nothing like an angry kid on the loose, you know,
absolutely.
Because now you got somebody that don't care. No guidance, misunderstood already, and angry. I mean, you can't rationalize with that type of individual, you know? So that's a process thing, and I done been there, did that, you know? And I thank God for where I'm at today, so I can definitely relate to the anger and the hatred thing, because, you know, I went through my thing at a very young age, you know, at 9 years old, when my stepfather got murdered in front of me and my mother. You know, I went to the street game at 10 years old, gang banging, selling drugs, this and that. So, yeah, I'm feeling you on all of that, man. And, you know, I got to say, I'm definitely thankful to the Creator that he's blessed you to get educated in the marriage that you knew you need to get educated in.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you know, I'm sure that there's so many other kids out there that are going through that type of thing, and they're out there, they're lashing out, and there's nobody out there, there's nobody out there besides people that have been through it to really understand what that particular kid is going through. you know, and we have the opportunity now because, you know, we are educated on it. It is out there. We all know that it's out there. You know, where do these kids go? Where do these kids go when they go through that? Besides the street, you know,
they go to
one more
some negative individual. That's where they go to, because you know, a lot of them, you know, don't take time out to listen to what's real until something major happened. When you're sitting on a life bid in the penitentiary, now everybody ready to listen. You got to listen before.
Right. Well, he got dropped. He'll call right back in. But
okay.
You know, the other thing with, you know, the serial shooters and murderers and people out here that are just upset in life, that they go out and take it out on just anybody. They don't care.
Exactly.
You know?
So, you know, I mean, and this is what we're looking at as people, and what do we really do? I mean, we go through, you know, like the way society is race class, money class, education class, you know, but at the end of the day, we're all, no matter how much education you got or no, how much less education you got, we're all still human, and everybody's a ticking time bomb. It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
All of that doesn't matter. You know, like, you don't know, you know, like, you get this kid that's got the picket fence, the White House, and guess what? He's going to snap. He's
going to
snap no matter what.
Right. He's going through the worst problems, because a lot of times they got identity problems when you come up in a house where you got it all. Yeah, I mean, you're in the white picket fence, and you see the homeboys in the hood. You think you're missing something, but really, you already got what we're trying to get up there and get. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, they definitely get it twisted at the white picket fence, you know, and that's something that, you know, I speak on a lot, too. You know what I'm saying? That's going backwards in life. Why are you going to try to come off the picket fence to come to the ghetto? What we're trying to get out of that? This is a jungle down here. You feel me? And that's what they don't understand until they get in there and get trapped.
Exactly. Trapped. I mean, you know, I got to thank God. I got to thank, you know, a lot of people that were in my life that has said something that has caught my ear, you know, and it didn't happen, you know, right away. It took time. Like, all these little, you know, notes that I took in my head, you know, from things that I was seeing out there, eventually replayed in my head, and I'm like, wow, wait a minute, this dude was right. And you know what? It was someone from the street. It was someone from the street that showed me that. So, you know, so I'm looking at it like, look, you know what? I've been in the clinker plenty of times, and every time God was on my side, I wind up walking my way out of it somehow, some way, because it wasn't meant for me. It wasn't meant for me. And then, you know what? You got certain people out there, you know, that are less fortunate. They get caught up in that. They get caught up in that, and then there is no other way out. There is no other way out, because now, you know, so then what happens from there?
You caught up doing a life bid in prison or dead, then game is over.
Exactly. Then game is over, you know. And meanwhile, we're looking at, you know, a bunch of innocent people that were brought into this world innocent, that have been twisted. They've been twisted to things that are going on out there because they had no other guidance. They had no other way to look, you know.
Bottom
and
line.
Then all of a sudden, 20 years go by, and you got a reality check, you know. My reality check, and it took a while, but my reality check was my daughter. My reality check was that I would never want to be the father that my father was.
My man, and I say the same thing, my man. I can relate to you on that at all, because, you know, I never wanted to be related to the same man my father was, you know what I mean, because, you know, he took care of everybody else but family, you feel me? And me and him opposite, you know what I mean? I've always watched out for my family and my team, you know? I didn't put my team in my family, you feel me? Because both of them was my family. So how could I, you know what I mean, not be there for one and not the other, you know what I'm saying? So
absolutely.
That's what me and him You know what I mean? It's totally like night and day. You know, he watched out for everybody but his people, you know. So
yeah.
Thank God I never had his mentality when it came to that deal, because in the end, he died all alone, a lonely man. You feel me? At 74 years old. No
yeah.
friends, no nothing. You feel me? So
yeah.
I ain't know the type of mentality that he had. So you can gang all the success you want to gang in life, but one thing people fail to realize, if you live to get older and older and older, and then all that shit you can't touch no more, or you can't handle your business no more, and you twisted and stuck now you're looking like a fool because you didn't take care of all the people you should have been taking care of, you know?
Exactly. You know, that's funny because, you know, when I was a kid, I used to go to work with my old man, you know, and sometimes there were some really dreadful days, you know, of like,
right.
I'm talking about going through the whole day of like mental and physical abuse. And I remember we were on a job with a bunch of people one time, and this one guy says, you know, if you could be a better man than your father, then you know that you did okay. I never understood that, you know. I never understood that up until I got custody of my daughter. I never understood that. And now I do. You know, I know that as a father, as a man, as an individual in society, and where my mental state is at to bring my family up. You know, like, when I left the house at 15, I got involved with someone. I wound up having a kid with an older woman, you know. Something that I despise the most is a man hitting a woman. You know, she was an alcoholic. At that point, I'm like, all right, let me do the right thing. I took the advice of what I heard. You know, get your main earned. Do what you have to do. Do the right thing. Get a job. You know what I'm saying? Everything else just falls into place after a while. And I did that. And to come home to see a drunken woman with my kid in the crib crying for hours. So what did I do? I pick up my daughter. I walk downstairs. I leave. I come back. She's being spiteful. She turns around and says that I hit her. Cops come. I'm not intoxicated. She is. My daughter's in the crib crying. I talk to the cop. The cop again. You know, I have a reputation with them. They know me already. And I said, look, my daughter's inside. She's intoxicated. She doesn't need to be here. My daughter doesn't need to be here. Well, she's saying that you hit her. Guess what? I wind up in the clinker for 2 days. I end up in the clinker for 2 days for not doing absolutely nothing. So how many times are you going to put your hand over the fire before you get burnt? So I did what I knew best. The same thing I did at 15, I did at 21. I walked away. I left. So from there on, I wound up losing touch with my daughter. I wound up losing touch of what I needed to do as a man, you know? And every time I try to get closer and closer, I ended up in the clinker. Guess what? My daughter ended up in ACS. My daughter ended up in social services through the system. All this,
wow.
You know, like, the way the whole system works. Imagine that. Imagine, you know, you being a father, not even, you know, them saying, you know, let's go and let's find this kid's father because she deserves that. She deserves that opportunity. Or, you know what, even more so, you know, besides just her deserving it, maybe I deserve it as a father,
right.
You know. And turns out my daughter's not there. Now, my daughter's through the system. Finally, that happens. We go through everything we had to go. I hated her for it. I hated this woman for doing this to my daughter. I hated her. And
right.
Turns out, you know, I hated her, you know, but not enough to hit her. Not enough to hit her. It's never enough to hit a woman. So my...
Well.
Conscious decision was to walk away, and I didn't. I lost touch of my daughter for 6 years. 6 years.
Wow.
And then finally when I ran into the daughter, you know, to my daughter's stepfather, you know, and I talked to him from one man to another, like, listen, you know what's going on. Let's do what we got to do. The guy decides to bolt his chest out. All of a sudden, I wind up going back to my roots. I hit the guy, I end up in the clinker. Right? Right?
Right.
So then years go by, you know. Years go by. I decide, you know what, now's the time for me to go and get custody of my daughter, because I made a decision that, you know what, the streets, the money, whatever comes easy will always go easy.
Right.
So okay. I made a conscious decision. You know, I made a conscious decision and said, you know what, I'm going to go and put this out on the table. I'm going to go, and I'm going to go get custody of my daughter, and I'm going to raise her right. And years went by, and I did that. I did that. I did whatever it is I needed to do.
That's
you know, and all of that, and the way I got custody of her is everything that I learned out there in the street. To be honest, to be loyal, to know, you know, what's real and what's not. And when I went up to that judge, all the way out in Albany County, and I put all my cards out on the table, and I said, here you go. I said, everything that everyone is ever going to say about me, or whatever it is you're going to find out about me, is right there in front of you. Right there. I said, maybe half of those things I did and half of them I didn't, but none of that says that I'm a bad father.
Right.
None of that says that I'm a bad father. So give me that opportunity. And she did. And for the first time, I actually looked at a person of authority and said, wow, holy shit. Like, you know, she's actually listening. She's actually listening. And she gave me custody of her. I wound up getting custody of my daughter Father's Day.
Nice. That's great.
You know?
My man.
You know?
And that's a congratulations on that.
You know, and part of, and a lot of that mentality that helped me go through that is by reading. By reading, you know, I don't, you know, I'm sure if you ever heard of the author Robert Greene, you know, he says so many different things, so many different parables of how to get what you want and how to achieve what you want. You know, it's all through a mental state of what, of the conscious decisions that we make of what we want. You know, and I know that it, you know, some of that is so hard to see when you got a load of problems on you. You know,
right.
But the reality is, you know, I'm more in the thought of mind of what we want is right in front of us. We just got to mentally and energetically focus our life towards what we see as a better future. You know,
yeah,
and we actually,
yeah.
And if you keep positive and you keep on that mind and you keep on, you know what, and I know that it's hard. I know guys that came out of jail, you know, they don't know what their next step is going to be, so we go back to what we're used to. But
right.
If we actually keep that positive mentality of, look, you know what, this is what we want. You know, this is, you know, and getting to what we want is a struggle, but it's all about the sacrifices that we make. You know,
right.
And you say, you know, it's the sacrifices that we make. You know, like, you know, before my daughter was born, you know, if I had to go and flip burgers to do that, then I would do that. But knowing in the back of my mind that there's a better, brighter, harder future that's going to actually make things easier later on, but harder in a sense where our decision making is harder, but easier in a sense that we're going to be able to live free, to be able to say, you know what, this is what I have accomplished, this is what I've done. You know,
amen for that, brother. You know, so how old is your daughter now?
My daughter's 15 years old. I've had custody of her for the last 5 years.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I've had custody of her for the last 5 years. You know, I her mother passed away 2 years ago, 3 years ago, actually.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, she died. She passed away due to alcohol problems, you know. And again, you know, for a long time I hated her, you know, for the things and decisions that she made, but you know what? I don't know what she's been through growing up, you know, and I can't judge her on that. So I got to forgive her. You know, I got to forgive her. I got to forgive her. You know, I got to forgive her for that. And all I got to know is that I was blessed to be able to take my daughter in from whatever she's experienced through ACS, through the system with her mother. And I was able to try to make that better. You know,
my
daughter became a 97th percentile student. in school.
Wow.
Great.
That's good. Now, what happened to your mother?
Well, my mother is living with, she's out in Long Island. She's living with both of my brothers, you know, which I don't talk to, I don't speak to anymore, because they have a very vulgar attitude towards my mother, you know, and a lot of that vulgar attitude and mentality and the way they speak is a spitting image of the man that I despise the most, that I've despised the most, you know, my
right.
father. And,
right.
you know, and I had asked my mother, I said, look, 30 years you went through this abuse. Now you got your kids that, you know, she raises my niece and nephew. And I asked her, I said, you let them speak to you that way, you know, and out of respect for my mother, I couldn't really jump into that, because that's also her
right.
kids, because if it was up to me, I would have definitely lost the new, you know, would have definitely lost the bolt already. And
yeah.
it happened to
my
that.
Man.
You know, it definitely went to that. You know? So I can't be around that. I can't be around that type of surrounding. So she basically now, you know, she dedicated her life to my niece and my nephew, and I thank God in the world that she's there for them, because they need her, you know. They definitely
right.
need her. She's, you know, she's a good person. She's, you know, she's got a lot of love. You know, how could I say? Like, she's, my mother, from what I remembered her from when I was a little kid to who she is now, understanding what she's been through, she's definitely not the same person. She's definitely not the same person through all of that, you know.
Well, I don't, you know, nobody that's beat up their whole life can be the same. You know, you're either
yeah.
worn down and beat up and broken down, or, you know, you can get out of it and become a stronger, better person, but definitely not the same person.
Exactly. Never the same. Never the same.
Right.
You know, and I had to make
you know,
it
you can
like,
take
you
a
know,
loving person and a kind, compassionate person and turn them into, you know, a person that's full of hate and bitterness, you know. And I think, you know, anybody that gets beat up is going to have some hatred. And I mean, I can't imagine
absolutely.
Them not.
Absolutely. I you know, I 100% agree, you know. You know, again, you know, my father was an angry person, you know. He was definitely an angry person. But I also seen, you know, a different side of him also, that he had, like, this compassionate side of him. It came out every once in a while, but it was there. So who knows what he went through. That's why I needed
right.
to stop hating him. And I needed
right.
to stop hating him, not so much for him, but for me.
For you.
For me,
right.
For me to say, you know what, I understand, you know, this is who you are. I can't change that. But I all I know is that I can make a decision on not being like that and not provoking anything like that and not liking anything like that, and to show what actually goes on and being able to repeat and see what the difference is and how we need to be and what's right and what's wrong. You know,
right.
I have a wonderful relationship now. You know, my girlfriend, you know, which is one of my biggest supporters in life and what I'm trying to do and to Victoria. She's a great mother figure. You know, she knows the type of man that I am, and she knows that I hold her in the palm of my hand. And knowing that I could share that, being what I've been through and what I've seen, I've already accomplished so much more in my life.
Right.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have out there for the young kids that are in school and have come from a background like you have, where there's a lot of abuse in the house, they probably have low self-esteem, they're lashing out at school, and they're not getting any understanding from the teachers or people at school? What advice could you give our youth about that kind of situation?
You know, what I suggest is to always say something. Say something, open your mouth. You know, anything is better than going through that. But at the same time, You know, we're stuck. We're stuck in this position of what do these youths got to go through? You know, do they meet or do they get put in a place where they're going to be safe? We don't even know that. You know, the way the system is working, the system says, well, we're going to take them out of here and put them here. And nobody's actually looking and seeing what's going on. So instead of taking these kids out of their home and being able to improve a person's life, why don't we just take them? I mean, we're spending the money anyway. They're spending the money to pay foster parents. Why don't we take the ones that have the issue and say, look, let's put this family in this home together so we could show them the way. We could show them that all this hard shit that they're going through, okay, could actually make it better. That's what, that's what I'd like to see for the future. You know, when we'll see that, we don't know. But what I will say out there is that, look, experiences, there's someone out there that understands and knows what you're going through. We're not the only ones. The only thing is that we need to speak up and do what we have to do. You know, and the options are there. Like, we have, like, for instance, we have Lucinda and Rob Boyd. It's out there. It's out there for you to get. It's just not heard of as much back then as it is now. Now we all know it's here. It's here. Let's take that option. Let's take that option.
Right.
Appreciate
and the kids out
myself.
On the street, the kids out on the street understand you, but not because they're going through good things, but because they've also gone through bad things, and that's what they understand. So they have a, they're able to bond with you on the other end.
Which is true, you know, which is true. And I hope with everything, you know, and I pray for everything that's in me that, you know, this show or other shows that you've had, you know, fall on the ears of the kids that are out there that need to hear this, that need to hear that there is somebody out there, you know, that understands the same way I seen it growing up, you know, that I clung to those people that understood what I was going through. That see, you know, that actually are looking at you in a mirrored image and see more of you than what they've, you know, than what they was able to do for themselves.
Right. You know, and where did your dad grow up?
My father, my dad grew up in Italy. He grew up in Italy. He grew up in
did
Italy.
Did you know
he
your
here.
Grandparents?
What's that?
Did you know your grandparents?
I knew my grandmother, and my grandmother was very abusive. Also, you know, and that's where my abuse started from. You know, because when we first moved here from Europe, you know, that's who I stayed with. I stayed with my aunt and I stayed with my grandmother, and my grandmother was a lot like my father. You know, in order for her to explain what she wanted you to do, she'd hit you first.
Right.
You know, and then she'd ask you, you know, questions later on.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I could just imagine, you know, and that's what stuck to me, to be able to have peace with this man and realize that I needed to let it go because, you know, of what the
that's
way she
probably
was.
Probably all he knew because he grew up being treated the same. And that's where it's important for us to break that chain. And it looks like that you've done that. And that's awesome because, you know, our families go back generations and generations, and we don't know how our, you know, our grandparents and from then on were treated. You know, obviously a lot of them were bitter, and that's the only way they knew how to express themselves. Not that maybe they were not bitter, but maybe that's the only thing they knew, because that's everybody in the family acted like that. And,
absolutely.
You know, just like back then, spankings, when we grew up, spankings were normal, you know, and it was, you respected mom and dad, or at least you're going to listen next time if you got a spanking after something you did wrong, where, you know, nowadays kids think they can call the cops on you and you know, get you in trouble for trying to be a parent.
Yeah, you know, I mean, all, you know, the one thing that I could say, okay, because I've been through so many different things, so many different obstacles with my daughter, you know, because of what she's been through.
Right.
She's been through ACS. She's seen her mother intoxicated. She's seen her mother get locked up. she actually got into a car accident with her mother, you know. So I deal with all the repercussions of that, you know.
Right.
And as a father, you get frustrated and you're like, damn, what am I doing wrong? But at the same time, you have to have that understanding of what this kid's been through, you know.
Exactly.
And we
and give
we
her the right kind
un-
of counseling or help that she needs to talk through.
Exactly,
mm-hmm.
You know, and as parents, you know, we, you know, and you know, and I understand, not that I understand, but I've seen the old school mentality of like,
right.
You know, you smack your kid in the mouth once and it's okay. No, it's not okay, especially for little girls. I have two little girls, and if they see that it's okay for me to discipline them by smacking them in the mouth, then you know what? What's it to them for them not to have another man hit him in the face.
Right. They're going to think it's normal.
They're going to think it's normal.
Or that it's
so,
okay. Right.
Yeah, exactly. That is, you know, exactly my point, that it is okay, and it's really not.
It's not okay.
So we as parents, we need to learn that our generations have changed, so we need to discipline our kids differently. You
right.
know, and I understand that kids go off the wall, and I understand, you know, well, obviously, you know, certain kids go through mental issues. I get that. But certain
right.
kids are lashing out because something that's going on. Something has
exactly.
happened. You understand? Like,
exactly.
My first arrest, I was 11 years old. You know, my father, even though he was the way he was, but he wasn't a street guy. I mean, you know, as crazy as it sounds, the guy wouldn't even steal a dime off the floor. You understand
right.
what I'm trying to say? So he had me working with my uncle. My uncle was a young guy. My uncle got involved with women. My uncle got involved with alcohol. Guess what? He winds up having a gun one time. My first arrest was with my uncle. You know, my uncle was a clowny type of guy. He would never hurt a bug. But on one of his drunken nights, he had a .22 pistol in his pocket. He decided to joke around with someone that he knew, all right, because we had a business in the same area, and this guy was at the gas station. My uncle was being a clown. He says, hey, one of these days I'm going to shoot you. So what do you think the guy's going to do? He's going to tell the cops. So we go back to the car. Four cops surround the car. Cops that we know that came into our shop every single day asked my uncle politely. Now, this is back in the 80s. That way, if you had a handgun and you handed it in, it let you go, right?
Right.
It was like either late 80s or early 90s. So the cops walk up to the car and they ask my uncle, hey, Tony, you got a gun? My uncle replies, no. My uncle, when he got into the car, he placed the gun in the middle of the console. So me, being the loyal, tough guy that I thought I was, I grabbed the gun, stick it between my legs. They get me out of the car. They get my uncle out of the car. They search my uncle. They don't search me. They search the whole car, right? Till finally,
mm-hmm.
one cop says, search the kid. Guess what? They find the .22 pistol.
Mm.
That was my first arrest.
Yeah.
That was my first arrest. You understand the way things go? And like, you know, like, maybe my father didn't understand where I first started looking into the street as a glorious thing. You understand what I'm saying? Because,
mm-hmm.
that's not what he taught us. But between going through what he's going through, you know, putting me through, and me, you know, being open to all these different other things, like a .22 pistol at 11 years old, you know, we all know what's going to happen from there. So I glorified
right.
that. Absolutely, I glorified that. Because that's where I got the most love when I ended up home. You know, it was like, oh my God, you're all right. Well, you know, so,
right.
so that's what
right.
we're used to, you know. And,
so you got treated better after you did something bad and got in trouble, and then
absolutely.
Came back home and you got all the attention and everything that you were
absolutely.
Looking for.
Absolutely. You know, and that's my point. You know, to all these other kids out there, is that, you know what, that attention only lasts for so long, you know. That feeling only lasts for so long until you're looking for the next one, you know, and that's
Amen.
Not the answer.
At all, you know. And we definitely thank you, definitely, man, for coming on the show and definitely spreading that message out there, because like we all say, it's always some kid going through the same thing that someone else done went through, and it's our job and our duty to share that message, to reach out and help those who's ready to be helped. So just want to give you big ups for coming out on the show tonight and spreading that message.
Well, thank you for having me, and, you know, I'm definitely so happy to see that there is a place where it's understood, you know, and I'm happy
Amen.
Of your movement, and I'm a total supporter of it, and thank you for being there to actually hear what's going on and being able to spread that word.
Yeah, we thank you and appreciate that too, man. Thank you so much. Any last words or any last shout outs you would like to give anybody?
I'd like to give a shout out to my daughter, you know, definitely to my daughter for helping me, you know, for giving me the opportunity to be a good father. You know, and
Amen.
and thank you.
Right. That's definitely a man on that.
Thank you very much. And you, God bless you guys. And, you know, that's pretty much it.
Can you give us a last word, Filippo, a little bit to all those out there that are being abusive to their wives, girlfriends, mothers? Give us a little bit from your mind and your experience.
From my mind and my experience.
Right.
To all those out there.
Talk to the abusers.
Talk to the abuser. Well, what goes around comes around, and when it hits you, it's going to hit you real hard, and you're not going to know what it was. And
Amen.
Look around you. Look around you. Look around you. Look around you, because there's always going to be somebody standing there ready to take down anyone that decides to take advantage of people like that. You know, and it's there.
Amen.
Talk a little bit about to the moms and the wives that are in that situation.
To the moms and the kids that are in that situation, I my heart and my love is out there for you. And you know what? It's so much easier. It's so much easier for your futures to just pick up and walk away. And show your kids, and show yourself the love that you deserve, you know?
That's right.
Show
There's
the love
a lot
that
of
you
help
deserve.
Out here now for domestic violence victims.
You know, exactly. All those people out there that are going through that, my heart is out to you. And I understand that you feel like there's nowhere else to turn, but there is. There is. All you got to do is reach your hand out, take that first step, and get yourself out of it. Everything will be okay, you know. Everything will be okay as long as you make that first step. And if you can't make it for yourself, you look at your kids, and you make that step for your kids because they deserve it.
Show you right.
They deserve it 100%.
That's right.
What's that? I'm sorry, Rob.
Oh, no, I was just saying, that's the real deal. You know what I mean? On everything you just said, that was the real deal. You know, and people can't do nothing but respect that right there, because you're a young man that done went through that, and you reaching out telling not only the women and the men, but you are letting these young youth know, too, because you got a lot of that abuse going along with these teenagers now. They think if these young knuckleheads don't hit them or something, you know, they don't love them or care about them. So, you know, we must break that cycle right there, because that's a dead-end cycle, you know?
Absolutely, you know, and especially, you know, and I mean, this goes for both ends, whether you have a son or whether you have a daughter, you know, by you walking away and showing your son that it's not okay for you to go through that, you're going to save another little girl one day, or you're going to save
right.
another human being from
right.
reciprocating that type of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And for your daughters, you're going to teach them that, you know what, And I know that, you know, I know that there's a lot of mothers out there, and you know, you have one mother in this world. You have one mother. And I know that the mothers in the world out there, I know that they love their kids, and I know that, you know, when they're first giving birth to their child, they look at them, they love them, they want to keep them safe, they want to give them a better life. You know, they need to just really look and think back at that and think that it doesn't stop at the day that they're born. It continues,
right.
It continues to teach these kids that, you know what, don't ever be treated in any less than what you are, you know?
Right.
Amen.
And it's not okay. It's not cool. It's not cool.
Right, exactly.
It's not.
Well, we thank you for coming on and sharing your story. It's a powerful testimony of overcoming, you know, your life situations due to domestic violence and abuse. And, you know, you've overcome it, and you've gone through a lot to overcome it, and it's taken a long time to overcome it. But, you know, we're really proud of you for overcoming it and being able to change and raise your daughters and teach them the right things and hopefully break that cycle, that chain of pain that you've had to go through your whole life. And, you know, we're hoping that your daughters will never have to go through that.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. I mean, you know, I was looking at some of your posts, you know, and talking about a reality TV show. You know, we watch and we promote and we continue to watch all these things on reality TV that doesn't show any positive at all. This is
exactly
what we need. This is what we
exactly
need to show the positive. This
exactly
is reality TV. This is real life. This is what people
right
go through. This is you know, we want to amuse. Let's amuse the world with showing them that we could take situations and people out of bad situations and bring them to a more positive. Bring that out. Let's open up
right
our eyes to something that makes more sense. You know.
Exactly.
That makes more sense. That's actually going to show a message of positive. That's actually going to show a message of what really goes on out there.
You know, and that's what we said before we started all of our shows. We're like, you know, let's find real people, tell their stories, and how they were able to change their situation and get out of a bad place to a more positive place. And
exactly,
you'd be amazed about some of the people that have come forward to tell their story. And it's not that anybody's famous or anything, but it's real. It's true. It's not
real.
Made up. It's not make-believe. It's not, you know, housewives getting on TV fighting about stupid stuff and talking about nails and hair and guys and whatever. It's real-life stories of real people struggling, what they went through, how they were able to get out of a situation and change their life and make something positive. And, you know, by us sharing these stories, and this was part of our mission and in our mission statement, to use these stories to be able to help somebody else. You know, and if we can touch one or two people out here somewhere, then we've done our job.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's definitely what, you know, we talk about every day. You know, we talk about politics, we talk about the economy, we talk about this, we talk, you know, we really should look at how we're raising our kids and maybe our economy and our futures and everything that we have here that's going on will actually be better if we open up our eyes to the things that, you know, are knocking us down here, knocking us down right here, you know. And that's real. Let's make the communities that we have. I mean, we all have the opportunity, you know, to share our experiences. We all have the opportunity to do that. But what happens when it's too late and we don't have that opportunity to share that experience, you know? And we have so many different channels and ways to prove our point or to try to help. You know, like we need to take this and bring it out so that it's easier for a kid to pick up the phone. It's easier for a woman to say, you know what, I got to get out of this.
Right.
You know, because it's more open, just like anything else. I mean, we watch the media every day. Like, you know, like going back from the 50s to the 60s to the 70s to the 80s, you know, we look at the generations of TV and how it changed, you know, and we see that things that we see now, we wouldn't have seen back in the 50s. Okay, that's great. But a lot of it has manipulated so many different things out there. Why hasn't this come out? Why hasn't a situation like this been brought out there? You know, and I don't mean, you know, by a kid just picking up the phone and calling the cops because he got slapped in the mouth, you know, because of his mother disciplining. I don't mean a kid, you know, taking advantage of the system and what's out there. That's not what I mean. What I mean is for the kids that are going, you know, that are going out there and that have nowhere to go, nowhere to turn to feel the cold world out there and to see that, you know, what's my next step from here?
Right. And, you know, you said it before, kids that are having trouble in school when they're small, and teachers need to recognize that the kids that are troubled and causing trouble, it's not just because they're troublemakers. You know, they need to find out what's going on with the kid. They need to have somebody sit down and talk with the child, spend a little more time with them. You know, just paying a little special attention to a child. They may just open up to you anyways without you, you know, asking what's wrong or is there something going on. If they can trust you and like you, you know, they're going to open up to you. But, you know, and that's the biggest problem out here in school with the kids. But the teachers, some of them are so busy in their own lives dealing with their own things that they don't have time or want to take the extra time with the ones that are causing trouble. They just, you know, send them to the office and get rid of them and don't deal with it.
Exactly. You know, and that's true. You know, I happen to have a friend who is she was a Golden Gloves champion 4 years in a row. She's a teacher up in Harlem. Her name is Sonia Lamonicus, you know, and she's got a heart of gold, you know, and she's been through, well, what I understand what the street has been. So she is actually a person that opens up to these kids and is like a figure to them to vent. You know, and they look at her as some sort of saint. I mean, she's excellent with these kids up there. She's from Massachusetts. She came up to New York. She became a boxer. She's been through her share of things, I'm sure, because she's got that open heart. And in order, a lot of people that actually have that open heart actually understand the way things have gone. You know, right. The way things have gone. And the answer, and again, the answer is not to take these kids and put them through a system. You know, now you're turning them into a, what's the word I'm looking for? They're turning them into
that's
a certain
kid.
Grade of like, yeah, you know, exactly,
somebody,
you know,
yeah.
and a statistic. You know,
right.
you don't want these kids to become statistics. And this is what we do in society. You know, we say, well, this kid's bad because of this, or, you know, or you go, well, my kid's bad because he's hanging out with this kid. That's not, you know, that's not the way it is. You know, that's
right.
Not the way it is. You know, and we start to make statistics out of these kids and what they become. And this is what happens when you do this. But who really understands the underlying issue of what's going on?
Right.
You know, besides, you know, people like yourself or people like me or people or your listeners or women that are going through it, you know, or men that are going through it, you know. So, you know, I mean, again, you know, like I seeing her, and she's a teacher, you know, she's a teacher. And for me to see that meant it, just her as a human being, that made me see that there is the opportunity out there, you know, that they are, that people are different, people are open to listening,
right.
And they are open to change, you know. And she's one of them.
And we have the opportunity every day to talk to kids that we see hanging out on the street, kids that we see, you know, hanging down on the street corner, kids uptown that, you know, are just by themselves, there's always opportunities to talk to kids and, you know, hey, hi, how you doing, what's going on, you know, and just give them the opportunity to talk and share and
know that
people are out here watching and listening and, you know, especially from your own neighborhood. If you, you know, if you have, you know, like the olden days, we all knew each other better. Nowadays, a lot of times we don't even know who our neighbors are, but you still have the opportunity to talk to kids that are out on the streets, that are out here at the park, or that are out doing things, you know. And there's a lot of kids that you see that are unattended for long periods of time. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's definitely something that, you know, I'm hoping that people, you know, and you know, as a teacher, like, you know, if I was to make a decision and say, look, I'm going to become a teacher, you know, and I'm taking on 8 hours of the day of the responsibility of these kids, because that's what we do as teachers. Besides teach them the education and what they need in life, we actually taking them on as responsibilities through our day.
Right.
You know, and we, you know, without judgment on what race, what background, what actions a kid takes, we have to, as adults, as teachers, as adults, you know, I would take a step back and say, look, you know, this is an innocent kid. At one point, you know, maybe if the kid's in the fifth grade or the fourth grade, we have to remember that this kid was on a bottle not too long ago, you know, and these are the years that we're still raising them. We're still giving them that bottle. We're still feeding them what they need. So, you know, as teachers, this is what we do. We give them what we need to be successful in life. So we can't, you know, we can't say, well, you know what, this one kid is just a, you know, a spoiled egg, and I got 36 other kids. Like, we just can't do that, you know. We can't do that because we see, you know, as teachers, they see more than the parents ever do. We all
right.
know that.
Well, and
you know,
a lot of parents want to say, not my kid.
Well, that's true, too. You know, that's definitely mm-hmm. absolutely true. But, you know, as parents, we need to open up our eyes and say, well, you know what? It is my kid.
Right.
It is my kid.
Exactly.
That, you know, that's our responsibility as parents because we know
right.
who we are. You know, we yeah. are a reflection. You know, what do they say? 95% of who you're going to be, you know, 10% of that is who our parents were or what our backgrounds were. So as parents, we have to know what our backgrounds are and what we have to look out for on how to raise our kids. Because no matter what, they have that in them. They have that in them. You know, it's almost like, you know, a woman that has, you know, a drug-addicted baby before they're even born. We know that they have that issue. We know that 9 times out of 10, they're going to have a substance abuse problem because it was
right.
given to them intravenously before they were even born.
Right.
So we know through all these other tactics and all these other things that they're going to see, or they know of what you've been through when you were pregnant or when you have that kid, or what you're doing for the first 2 years of that kid's life, you know, it's in them. It's in them. So we have to make that decision on as parents to go to guide them away from what we know or from what we've experienced. Not,
right.
not so much what we know, but what we've experienced. And we
right.
got to know what
right.
to look out for, you know, and stop the denial game. Because that denial
right.
game, you know, that denial game just doesn't work. It doesn't work. The reality is it's there, and we have to guide them as parents, you know,
right.
as parents, as friends, as an acquaintance down on the street, because this is what gave me the opportunity to open up my eyes, because I had certain people on the street. I had certain people that I just passed by that knew of me, that knew what I was about, that took 5 minutes to put something into my ear that I mean, at the time you didn't hear about it, but guess what? When you're sitting there and you're in a jam, you're going to think about what that person said. You're going to think about it because
yeah.
that's the only thing that's going to make sense to you. So it's going to ring. It's going to ring in your head. It's going to sit there and it's going to come back to you at some point. So whether we say it once, whether you got to say it 10,000 times, you know, the same thing, the same thing. And it has happened. It has happened to me, you know. And these little phrases, again, that's been told and that's been said, and us as parents, that we have to keep repeating ourselves to our kids, like, listen, this is what it is. This is what it is. You know, one day, you know what, hopefully, you know, and this is, again, this is my experience. Hearing all those things is what made me realize what I needed to make better for my kids.
Right.
For me. Hearing all those things over and over and over and over again, you know?
That's the bottom line. You know, it's like a lot of people want to not acknowledge that there is a problem. A lot of people try to just, you know, look like, oh, little Susie, little Johnny, oh, they the greatest kids in America. They don't do no wrong. But they doing everything up under the sun, you know? So
exactly.
The denial game got to stop, like you said, and there's so many people out here that's in denial. It's unreal when it comes to that, you know, and they got to, you know, get that off the marketplace, because you don't know what little Johnny and little Susie doing when they out your
exactly.
outside, you know what I mean?
You know,
they gang
banging,
doing drugs, dropping pills, they doing it all.
Exactly, and you know what it is that I remember, you know, going through school, every once in a while, like, you'd have like a drug counselor come in, and they would talk about drugs, and they tell you what not to do and what to look out for, and then as time went on in the early 80s, you know, where kids sexually abused started coming out more, and you know, like, you know, they would come into school and they'd demonstrate what, you know, what an abuser would do, a sexual abuser would do to lure a kid in. So they started, you know, they started to try to, you know, teach people and kids what to look out for. But what about everything else? What about
right.
everything else in between that? You know, it's not just
right.
sexual abuse that a kid has to go through, you know,
right.
that you know, that's going to torment their life. There's so many different things that we or them back then, you know, didn't work, you know, in between those issues of what is going on.
Right.
You know? So they stopped it at some point. You know, like, you know, they talk about, you know, budget cuts. They talk about this. They talk about that. We don't have enough money for the schools. But look, you know what? Maybe, if we took out, you know, certain things that really don't count in certain schools and say, let's give these kids the opportunity to listen to this. Let's give them the opportunity to understand what's going on. Maybe if you're going into these schools and there's that one kid that's actually going through it, he's actually going to hear what's going on. He's going to
hear,
and he has it in front of him. You know, like, even back then with the whole sexual abuse, the minute they started demonstrating these things in school, it blew up. The counts of kids that were getting sexually abused just went out of the roof.
Right.
Through Catholic schools, through this, through that. But
mm-hmm.
what about, you know, so now if it was brought out in between, the in between all of that stuff, you know, then maybe we have the opportunity to save them at a young age, at that age.
Right.
You know, and you know, unfortunately, the way this system works, the way we have everything here, is that, you know what, right away, you know, both parents are accountable. You know what? There's
right.
certain parents out there, you know, the woman's out there working, the husband's, you know, the husband is home, you know, who knows what they're doing, the wife is home, who knows what she's doing, you know? So it has to be, you know, a safe house for these kids. And I don't mean for ACS to come in, take your kids, put them somewhere, and just forget about them, you know?
Right.
Bring them to a safe house where if you're the person that's taking them in to make them safe, then sit there and watch them. You know, the amounts of money that the states have spent on social services and paying for foster homes is insane. The numbers out there are insane on what they have to pay. You know, I'm still paying for that. You know, ACS took my daughter half a dozen times. I had to stay away from her mother. You know, my name is on her birth certificate. Why didn't anybody from ACS contact me and tell me,
right.
you know what, your daughter's in this situation? What, because of the person that you're taking her away from is claiming one thing, but how, you know, how's her credibility on what she's saying?
Right.
You know, and I'm sure that that's happened in so many different things. I mean, look, I was reading, you know, and I'm still paying for this. I paid my child support in total. They tell me now I owe them $13,000 for the times that my daughter was in ACS. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You know, I went down. I filed for a petition. I went down to the ACS building. There's only one person that I could serve, okay? There's only one person. They said, oh, you have to serve the commissioner of ACS. Okay, well, good luck doing that. Good luck doing that while I'm trying to raise my daughter, and this kid, through the stories and the horrific things that she's told me that she's been through, being that ACS placed her, dropped her off, and walked away. We hear about it all the time. We hear about it. You know, kids get placed. They end up dead. Why? Because nobody's really watching anyway.
Right.
We hear about it. It's there. You know?
It's really bad because the people, right, they're taking the child from what they feel is an unsafe environment, and it might be, to another place that's probably not the best environment either. You know, we hear all the time about kids being abused in foster homes and in facilities and different things. And, you know, the government are the ones that are making the big bucks on it because, like you said, they're charging you for taking your child away from you, and you didn't even know where she was for part of the time. You know, and the same thing with the prison. They're putting you in prison for either what you did or maybe for what you didn't even do, and they're charging you to be there.
Well, I mean,
so
you know,
the government
wins
all the way around.
I mean, that's exactly what it is. I mean, ACS system, you're taking your kids, you know, they take your kids, they put them, in a facilitated type of environment where they, you know, they're being checked like they're, you know, like, you know, they have an expiration date on them, you know. So now, guess what? These kids are getting used to this institutionalized type of environment. So what becomes of them then? Because if that's all they know, besides everything else that they need to know, that there is other positive things. Instead, they're taking them, they're placing them into who knows where, and you know what? They're getting used to institutionalized. No matter which way you spin it, it's still
even
an institution of the state.
Even if it is a better place than where they came from, they're still being institutionalized.
Exactly. You know, they're not getting what they need. They're not getting, you know,
the love
okay.
and care from a mom and dad and a family life, and so it's a totally different environment.
Exactly. You know, so now you're placing them somewhere, and they're still not getting what this kid is needed from the beginning.
Right.
You know, so that's not the solution here. That's not the answer. That's not the solution. You know? I mean, you know, it's just, you know, that's definitely, you know, and I really hope that the way and through the experiences that us as people have seen things happen to these kids being institutionalized to ACS, being placed with no regard of what they actually need, you know, that we can open up our eyes and come up with a different idea that's out there for them.
Right.
You know? Again, you know, we see it all the time. You know, you take your kid to the baseball game. It's about the kids. Is it really? Is it really about the kids? You take them to a baseball game, you see a big sign. It's about the kids. So, you know, if it's really about the kids, then, you know, the money that we spend on such unnecessary things in this world, you know, if 2% of that gets sent out, or even 1% of every organization out there that says it's for kids, okay, that the state has funded,
mm-hmm.
let's put it towards a different movement and see how things change, see how society changes, see how mentalities change. You know?
And see, a lot of them ain't gonna do that. a lot of them ain't going to do that, because I'm glad you spoke on that, because you got a lot of programs out here funded by the government and funded by the state, and they don't even want to do nothing for the youth or the kids. You feel me? That like it's their money. You feel me? So that's another thing that these organizations need to start doing more, is to really start getting in these youth and start educating and start doing things with these youth, and putting things in place for these youth to grow and get to where they need to be in life, besides, you know, just playing games, you know?
Exactly. Exactly my point. I mean, that's exactly my point. Instead of playing these games, just placing them. Instead of, you know, just giving them a pat on the back, like, we understand what you're going through, but you really don't. You really don't. You really don't know what that kid is going through. You really don't know what that kid's going to turn out to. And then guess what? They're adults. Society looks at them like they're any less of a person. So how did things change? They didn't. How did that system make anything better out of it? You know,
right.
You know, I have a younger daughter. She's 7 years old. You know, and me and her mom went through a divorce. You know, we both love our daughter very much. We both love her. You know, there was a little bit of a moment between me and her, and she took me to court. You know, being vindictive, she took me to court, and we sat in front of the judge. You know, and the judge and her thing was, I'm gonna go in and get custody, and everything's gonna be mine. You know, so when I went into court, I humbly sat myself down, and the judge asked her a question. The judge said to her, why do you want to take him, why do you want to take your daughter? And what I mean, and the judge said, what I mean by your daughter is your daughter and his daughter. Why do you want me to stop you guys from seeing each other? And the judge turned around and he said, look, he goes, us as a court system, and believe it or not, this was in the state of New Jersey, and I was really, really impressed by this man's words. He turned around and he said, us as a court, we're here to bring families together, not take them apart.
Mom.
So we stand as two adults that has been separated, that can't manage to raise their kids together, but we're here to bring them, you know, the love and the respect that you have to have for your kid to grow with this positive attitude, to be successful in what they want to do. So he handed her the law book, and he asked her, is he a drug addict? No. Is he an alcoholic? No. Do you feel that he would ever harm your daughter? Absolutely not. So he hands her the book, the Family Court Book of New Jersey, and he highlighted a certain area. He said to her, I'm going to read this out loud, and you repeat after me. Exactly what it says, I don't remember word for word, but basically what he was saying is, we as a court are here to bring separated families together. That was the point of his whole thing. So, that being said, she humbled herself and said, look, regardless of my feelings towards this guy, regardless of whatever's going on between me and him, we both want to raise our daughter the right way. We both have the right intentions for our daughter. So she humbled herself and realized, you know what, this guy is great. He is a good dad. He is a good father. So, in that aspect of the court, has changed so much within the last 10 years, you know, and I am proud to say that. I really am proud to see that. But as far as, you know, and there's so many other fathers out there that have gotten custody of their kids that, as opposed to 15 years ago, that would never happen. 10 years ago, that would never happen. Because directly, you know, the child belongs with the mother. And I mean, and I understand that, and I agree to a certain extent, if the mother is doing the right thing by their child. You know, and what
right.
I mean by that is not experiencing what my daughter has experienced. You
right.
know, But otherwise,
well, most
you know,
kids need the love and care from mom and dad, whether they're together or not together. They need to still feel that love and acceptance from both parents. You know, as we know, a lot of kids blame themselves for mom and dad getting divorced. Even, you know, it's not their fault, but they feel, oh, I did something wrong, or they don't love me anymore, or, you know, they go through a lot as children. But if they know still that even though mom and dad's not together, but both of them love me, they get to see me, they get to do things with me, you know, it still works better for the kids, as long as they're not harming the child, you know?
Exactly. I mean, and I agree, and I agree 110% with that. And us as adults, whether you know we're in that same relationship or we're not, or we split up, or it's over, or you guys hate each other, remember that we all have the, you know, and me as a pro, I can only speak for myself, that we all have the right intentions for our kids, you know, and a lot
right.
of people out there, you know, they try to have the right intentions, they just don't know which way to go. You know, I heard one story. This guy gets locked up for child support. Guess what? They lock this guy up. They send him in. They put this guy in the clinker. All right. He didn't even have a child. He did not even have a child. And they locked him up for child support. And the guy was killed and murdered in prison.
Oh,
a kid himself. A kid himself. He was about 24 years old. I don't remember where I heard the story from, but I remember actually listening to it, you know, on
somebody
you know,
claimed
YouTube.
He was the father, or how was that?
Well, whatever happened is that he was, somebody must have used
identity.
They locked him up for overdue child support.
Wow.
They sent him to jail, and they murdered him in prison.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. I mean, so if we let something like that, if something like that goes through the system, imagine what's going out there with these kids that are not even being heard of what actually, what you know, what they're going through. What these kids that are wrapped up in this system, this ACS system, and the whole thing, that these kids, you know, haven't had the opportunity to express what they're feeling. You know, like my daughter came to me and she told me some horrific stories. Stories of where they placed her. The man was beating his wife and my daughter happened to say something. So he took her and put her out in the snow with no shoes on, no socks on, and the kid got frostbitten.
Wow.
Did anybody hear about that? Absolutely not.
No.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about with the system, and this is what I mean. You know, if, you know, told me, if you're going to be a shoemaker, then you might as well be a good shoemaker. And that goes
right.
for the same system with everything else. If we're going to make a system for ACS, okay, Child Protective Services, then let's really
mm-hmm.
protect these kids. Let's really protect them. Let's not half-ass it.
Right.
You know?
Definitely. You know, I don't know who the system was built for or why it's so hard to discern, you know, the problems and get the kids in the right places that they need to be at. I don't know.
It's just, you know, that merry-go-round's got to stop. It's got to come to some sort of waking up. How many kids are going to pass away through the system? One is already too much.
Exactly.
One is already too many. You know?
Exactly.
You know, you hear about it sometimes, you know, your young mothers, they have kids, they don't know what to do, they end up taking this kid, they put him in a trash can, and guess what? She gets
mm-hmm.
caught, she gets life in prison for murder. So who gets
exactly.
you know, who gets the responsibility of these kids that are in the system?
Right.
Who takes that responsibility? You know?
It's a sad situation that any of our children have to go to an institution, you know. Why can't us as parents do the right things and take care of our kids? No child should be taken out of their home and put in an institution. You know, and it just
Absolutely
happens
not.
Way too often. Way too often.
It does. It does. It happens every day. And as we're talking right now, there's some kid getting ripped out of his house, getting put into a completely different situation that they have no idea about, on top of what they're dealing with already.
Right, exactly.
On top of what they, you know, on top of what they witnessed, of what they're going to witness, and what is going to be given to them, you know, that they're not ready for.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't ready to be on my own at 15 years old. I know that.
Right.
Right.
You know, I know that. I'll tell you that. I know that, and I put myself there. I made the decision to leave, and the reality of life that got brought out, you know, has created a whole other monster, you know. So where do we win?
Right.
Where do these kids win? Where do they win? You know?
Well,
they don't win in any of those situations.
You know, we missed one part where, you know, we talked about the kids that are going through it. We talk about the women that are going through it, the fathers, the abusers that are going through it, you know. And then we also have to talk about some of the people that are grown, that have been through it, that have been covering themselves or hibernating themselves into this world where they start going through all these mental issues and all these different experiences that they've brought them down to a dark place. You know, what's gotten me through, you know, is a lot of the reading that I've done. Like, I've done a lot of reading, you know, like, I believe in God, but I'm not very religious, you know, but there's certain things that I've read that, you know, we bring our minds, you know, towards the positive. And I know that it's hard. I know that it's hard. I know that, you know, all these different obstacles that we've been through bring us down. But, you know, we have to kind of, like, let it pass by us. As adults, we have to know that every other little thing shouldn't really bother us or affect us as much. And I know that it's hard to see that, especially when you've been taught that you were less of a person. It's hard to see that, but we have to. We have to. It's a mind. It's in your mind to try and see that we're looking at a better future. And if we believe in it, then it'll come. It will come. You know, it is there. It is there, and it's up to us to grab it. You know, Robert Greene said it. There's three kinds of people in the world. There's people that make it happen. There's people that ride with people that make it happen. And there's people that watch people that make it happen. You know, and he said, you know, can you distinguish who you are?
Right.
You know, and in the beginning of the book, he said something like, to those who did me wrong in my life, I bear you no grudges, but I thank you for giving me the knowledge and the power to write the 48 laws of power. You see what I'm saying? So that little phrase right there is what changed my mentality on things. So I don't have to hate upon everyone that has done me wrong, but use it to my knowledge to know what I'm not going to let come back to me again, that I am a better person than that. You see what I'm saying? And that kind of gave me the inspiration to let go and put all of that down and say, this is where I'm heading towards.
Right. Wow. It's all pretty heavy, you know, and there's so much that we have no control over, and yet there's so many things going on in our communities, you know, with our adults and with our youth and with our governments and different institutions. It's just unreal.
Yeah, you know, again, like, I was watching a program the other day that, you know, our institutions here in America, you know, privately owned prisons are the leading profitable businesses in the world.
They're money makers.
They're money makers.
Right. They're institutions.
You know, they're money makers.
But they're just businesses now, and that's why they're trying to take more of the private ones or more of the federal ones and make them privatized. Voice, go ahead. We lost Filippo for a minute.
Huh?
We lost Filippo for a minute. Hopefully he'll call right back in. Well, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, we just want to thank everybody for always tuning in every Wednesday night. And if you haven't got a copy of the books, make sure you log on and get the Streets Don't Love You Back and the Never Hit a Woman book at www.thestreetsdon'tloveyoubackmeme.com. Also, check out our online store and see what we have in there. We have the hoodies, we have sweatsuits, we have the beanies, we have the golf hats. We had short sleeve shirts, long sleeve shirts, thermos. We had the hookup. So log on to our store and start seeing what's happening there. And also want to give a big shout out once again to everybody across the country who support us and give us direction to keep moving forward in the right way as well, you know. So I'll turn it over to the missus for her announcements.
Okay, I would just like to thank everyone that was listening in the chat room tonight. We had several guests come in tonight, and for all those listening online, and you know, we just appreciate all the support that we have out there as we continue to grow and grow. We'd like to especially thank Filippo for coming on tonight as a guest and sharing his story, growing up in the middle of domestic violence and how he was able to get out of that and change his life. So we appreciate his testimony, and we'd just like to thank you all for, like I said, joining us this week, and we are live every Wednesday night. Please join us live at 8:30 Pacific Time, 11:30 Eastern Time, and check out our website. We do have some web shows on there, and then we also have some clips from our regular TV shows that are on Warner Cable in Cincinnati, Ohio. So, you know, we have a lot of resources and a lot of different information, and that's at www.thestreetsdon'tloveyoubackmeme.com, or just Google us, The Streets Don't Love You Back, and you'll find us. But we, you know, appreciate once again everyone's support, and we're going to go ahead and go out tonight with a song called Lost Without You by a new young artist, Kendall Day, out of Detroit, Michigan, represented by Grand Slam Records. Remember, the streets don't love you back, and have a great week.
I like that. It's Kendall Day. Lost without you, can't help myself. How does it I'm sexy, baby. You don't want nobody else. You don't want this guy. You don't want that guy. You wanna touch yourself when you see me. Tell me how you love my body. How I make you feel, baby. You wanna roll with me. You wanna hold with me. You wanna stay warm and get out the cold with me. I just love to hear you say it. It makes a man feel good, baby. I need to hear it because
sunny days, everybody loves them. Tell me, baby, can you stand the rain?
Can you stand the rain?
Storms will come.
Yeah, yeah.
This we know for sure.
This we know
tell
for
me,
sure.
Baby, can you stand the rain?
I can, so I'ma hit this drink up like it's my last. I'ma hit this night up like it's my last. I'ma do you like it's my last. I swear, I'ma do it. it like I never had it last. Like I never had it last.
Tell me you won't break my heart.